This is your big story of the day. The details, the consequences, and analysis. Big story of the day on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We're in studio today, and your big story focuses in on Brian Burke, the Flames president of hockey operations and interim general manager. That's some interesting things to say yesterday. And some good talking points to come from it. Brian Burke speaks, your big story, brought to you by the Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub on the corner of 12th and 12th with free parking. Now booking your Stampede events. Call Joe at 403-966-2244 for info. And so Brian Burke is in Toronto, and obviously there's going to be a ton of media requests for him. And he didn't do a ton of them, but the two that he did do, one with us on television and one with us here on Sportsnet 960 on the radio, he ends up giving some pretty good nuggets. And we'll start with this one because I do think it's maybe the number one big picture item on Flames fans' minds, and that is who is going to be the new general manager and when is that person going to be hired by the team. And Brian told our Peter Marr in the second intermission of last night's 3-2 loss in Toronto that they've got a much more narrowed down timeline, and for you, it gives you a much better idea of when we might hear something coming down news-wise.
We've done our list of candidates. We're going to request permission to speak to them, and I don't think that we're going to be able to talk to our entire list until after the draft. So this may be a case where we do a very intensive interviewing schedule starting in the first week of July, right after the draft. And if we have to wait that long, we're going to talk to the guys we want to talk to. We'll probably do some interviewing for the assistant GM job before that to narrow it down a bit so that when we do get the guy we want, he can take his pick of a shorter list or interview whomever he'd like. But we'll do some work on it prior to the draft. But the focus now is the draft. And then if we get permission to talk to these guys before that, we will. If I can get the new guy in place in time to run the draft, I will. But my suspicion is, and my hunch is, and I think it's almost a lock that at least two of the guys that we want to talk to will not be made available to interview before the draft.
And that's kind of an understandable sentiment. Like, I don't know. I didn't really have a lot of expectation that we were going to get a Flames general manager hired in the really near future here, because I don't think you want to mess this one up. I don't think you want to rush this, and you want to make sure you do all of your due diligence. You want to make sure that you're able to interview every guy on your list, not only the ones you can interview right now, not only the ones that you've been given permission to talk to from other teams. And you're likely not going to get permission, as Berkey just said, you're likely not going to get permission to talk to a lot of these guys until their seasons are done. So if you have somebody in mind that you would really like to go after in Boston or San Jose or Pittsburgh or wherever it might be, you probably are waiting a little bit longer than the end of April to be able to do these things. And if the Bruins or the Sharks or the Blackhawks, whoever, end up going deep in the postseason, you can't even get permission to start talking to them and to bring them in for an interview until after their season's done. And then you got to bring them in, and then you got to compare them with all the rest of your interview subjects. And so I just think you want to throw out as wide of a net as you possibly can. And with that net, you want to make sure that you then carry out your due diligence on all of the subjects that are brought in on that net. So I don't really have a problem with them waiting. I don't really have a problem with them deciding to wait until mid-July or maybe if it's August. Does it make a difference if you get a month of time to prepare for the draft or if Brian Burke is the guy who ends up drafting? I mean, no, I don't think it does. I mean, Brian Burke's still going to be the one who has the largest say in this year's draft because he's going to be the one with the best handle on the situation, the best knowledge of the organization. And so wait, get it right. That's the way to go. I know when I tweeted that out yesterday, right after he said it on the air, and a lot of sarcasm came back the other way. A lot of Washington Capitals fans who were very much saying, please take George McPhee. And then the other one that came back, I know, Al Strachan, the former personality on television, came out and he was like, doesn't matter, it'll just be a puppet. And a couple of others saying, oh, it doesn't matter, it's just, why doesn't Burke just name himself as the GM? Fair enough, and I understand that sentiment's out there. Make no mistake, as the president of hockey operations, Brian Burke has a ton of say as to what goes on in this organization. He has the final say as to every hockey move in this organization, and he's going to be the one dictating what the direction is. But that doesn't mean there's no value in bringing in a general manager. That doesn't mean there's no value in adding more hockey minds, because there's a couple of different things at work. Another hockey mind comes in, and it just adds to the knowledge that you have in your organization. How is that ever a bad thing? And then on top of that, I mean, he's still going to be the one conducting the day-to-day. He's still going to be the one negotiating chiefly on trades, as we understand it. And you're probably grooming a successor at the same point, too. I mean, at some point, you'd think that Brian Burke, as he moves on, might want to relinquish some of his control. And at some point in the next decade or 5 years, I don't know, there's a possibility that he might want to take a little bit of a step back. And that's just the way things go as you move on in your career and move on in life. And so there's a lot of different things at work as to why you want to make sure you get this hiring right. So there is kind of point number one and angle number one that we got from Flames president of hockey ops, Brian Burke, yesterday. Brian Burke Speaks is your big story on the big show. The second one, this was in the first intermission with Chris Simpson on Sportsnet Television, and some interesting, I guess, insight and a revealing nugget of information on the Mike Camilleri front. We all know he's a pending unrestricted free agent. We all know the Flames offered him a contract prior to the trade deadline. So where are they now in terms of their negotiations and their feeling on Camilleri?
We've had real good discussions with Cammy. We made him an offer that we think is fair. He thinks he can do better on July 1st, and we'll have to see how it plays out. He's been really good with us. He's not just played well for us. He's been a good leader. He's a disciple. You know, our team works very hard. Our practices are hard. Our video sessions are long. Our weight room sessions are long. And he's been a disciple. He's been a joy.
And what was talked about, or I guess the biggest, most important thing there, was him saying, we've offered him a contract. We believe it's fair, but he thinks he can get more in free agency. And I know that set off quite the buzz on Twitter yesterday. And understandably, because it's a pretty revealing piece of information. However, I will say this. It doesn't surprise me at all, because really, I've kind of expected that to begin with. I think the Flames have tendered a competitive offer and something that they believe will be in the ballpark of what other teams will give him come free agency. But put yourself in the shoes of Mike Camilleri right now. You're 31 years old, you've been to one Eastern Conference final, and you're entering the final opportunity for you to really get a big-ticket offer. He's only ever had one other time in unrestricted free agency. He got a big deal at that 5-year, $30 million contract he signed with the Montreal Canadiens following the 08-09 season, where he had 39 goals. And now he goes into another free agency period, where he probably has the opportunity to sign a 3 or 4 year deal and get a pretty solid average annual value on it once again. So there's that. And so even if he wanted to return to the Flames, and even if that was maybe something that he really, really had high on his priority list, I still think it's pertinent, and I still think it's probably him just being smart in seeing what happens in free agency, because this is an opportunity for you as an independent contractor. But number two, go back to that point I made about him only playing in the one Eastern Conference final. Like, this guy is as competitive as it gets. This guy wants to win. This guy wants to have an opportunity to go into a season and say, yeah, I believe that this team I'm playing for has a chance at winning the Stanley Cup. Now, I don't preclude the Flames from doing that in the future, but if he's getting a 3-year contract here as opposed to a 3-year contract with a more competitive team, there's probably 15 or 20 teams next year that have a better chance of winning the Stanley Cup than the Flames. Let's be realistic here. That's probably something that is realistic to say. And that's why I think there's a pretty decent chance Camilleri would sign elsewhere. So I was not surprised by that revelation from Brian Burke, and I personally have prepared myself for Camilleri to leave. And if he comes back, I'll be shocked. Pleasantly shocked, but shocked. And my final point on Camilleri is this, and we talked about it earlier with Josh. I think it's good that they didn't trade him, because at the trade deadline, they were not getting the offers that they wanted for him. They had to lower their price and still weren't getting biters, because things had kind of clogged up behind the Ryan Kesler trade queue, and then there was a scramble to get Vanek dealt and Molson dealt and Gabrick dealt and so on and so forth. So for the Flames to just give away Mike Camilleri and not really get any value back, and let's just hypothetically say, okay, they could have gotten a fifth from a team for Camilleri or a fourth from a team for Camilleri, I think there's a threshold. And that threshold is between getting an asset for a player, there's a good chance a walk at the end of the season, and getting the value that he has to your team right now. What is more valuable? And I lean towards it being more valuable that he sticks around. Because you're talking about a pro, a guy who approaches the game like a true professional, who can help young players on this team, young forwards on this team, whether it be by, you know, vocally coaching the guy or just seeing how he goes about his business every single day. I think there's a value in that. I think there's a value in him putting up the numbers he put up down the stretch. And I think there's a value in seeing some of the chemistry that he's had with Michael Backlund. Just the inherent value of Camilleri staying, I think, is more valuable than getting a fifth-round draft pick just so that you could give him away and get something. Because what's a fifth-round draft pick going to turn into? Yes, in extremely, extremely rare circumstances, it could turn into Jamie Benn. More often than not, it doesn't, and it turns into a guy who doesn't play in the NHL. So that's my final point on Camilleri. And then this piece, and this is kind of the coup de grace, because I thought that this was a really, really interesting point that Brian Burke made in conversation with Peter Marr. And Marr asked him about the whole tanking the season angle that we've had so many conversations about. Well, if you're in that camp, you probably won't like what Brian Burke had to say.
I really believe with what we charge for tickets and the loyal fan base, I think we have the best fans in the National Hockey League in Calgary. And you're going to tell them that we're not going to try to win that night? I think it's really offensive to our fans, our season ticket holders. I think it's really offensive to our corporate sponsors. And I think at the end of the day, you can't tell players it's okay to lose and then later on in a year or so say, now it's time to win, now we need you to win. I just think it's losing is just a terrible habit. And so, no, we're going to try to win every game and get every point, and then we're going to draft wherever we draft.
And that's the attitude you should have as an organization. And there are no teams in the NHL that actively try to lose. There aren't. Because that message from Brian Burke, I think, is pretty universal for the Buffalo Sabres or the Edmonton. Like, the Oilers aren't trying to lose. They got a bad culture. They got a bad team. That's why they're losing. But they're not going out there. There's no edict sent down from the top saying, hey, guys, it's cool. You guys should go try and lose. Get us some good draft picks. But in 5 years, you just, of course not. And so my take has always been, build your team, rebuild, and the byproduct of rebuilding a team is your team isn't as good, because you make moves for the future, you hurt your team in the present, and so your team in the present doesn't end up being as good. Your team not being as good, the byproduct of that is you get a better draft pick. That's just the way you naturally go about things. That's the way that it all takes care of itself. But there's nothing you can do to say that a team doesn't overachieve. And at times this year, the Flames have overachieved. And you can't get mad at them for doing that. You can't say, no, you're supposed to lose. They've done about all they can in rebuilding. They've done about all they can in making future moves to, at the same time, have that byproduct of lessening the competitive level right now. They've done that. Now the results have got to take care of themselves. And you draft wherever you draft. And if they draft third, they draft fourth, or they draft sixth, you make the best of that pick, just like they did last year. Yeah, you know what? They overachieved down the stretch, and they won some hockey games, and good on them, because nobody could control that. The players are still pros, and they went out and did their thing. Who did they draft number six overall? They drafted Sean Monahan, and I think he's a pretty nice piece. Is he Nathan MacKinnon? Maybe not. Is he Jonathan Drouin or Seth Jones? We don't know. Is he a big piece and an important piece for the future of this organization? Absolutely. And that's exactly the way the Flames have got to look at it as they move in to the 2014 draft in Philadelphia, regardless of how they finish this season, regardless of how many wins might hurt their drafting position. Get it right. That's the big story on the big show. Brian Burke speaks the big story for the Pig and Duke, your neighborhood pub on the corner of 12th and 12th with free parking. Now booking your stand. Stampede events. Call Joe at 403-966-2244 for info. We've got a busy headlines for you next. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
If it's on the 200 by 85, it's right here first. Calgary's home for the National Hockey League. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We do the research, filter out the crap, add some opinion, and fire it up for you on the drive home. Headlines start now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pat Steinberg along with you. We are in studio today as your 4 o'clock hour continues, and we will start on the NHL front as the Chicago Blackhawks will be without their captain for a little while as Jonathan Toews, who suffered an injury on March 30th in a loss against the Pittsburgh Penguins, isn't returning anytime soon. But is he returning, period? Here's head coach Joel Quenneville.
He's day-to-day. He's going to be 100% for the playoffs. We're not going to play him for the rest of the six games, and so he'll be ready to go. Yeah, I think that I didn't like the hit. At that time, what could you have done differently? You can look at all the different options. That there's probably no great option right at that time with a 2-1 hockey game. Later in the second period, getting even is something that how is addressed is something that you can talk about. The options weren't great. Tricky. It was a tricky one. Not an easy one to say exactly what should have happened.
So out for the rest of the season is Jonathan Toews. He got tangled up with Brooks Orpik in the second period of that game against the Penguins, but will be 100% come the postseason. And if you're the Blackhawks, you have this luxury. If you're Chicago, you have the ability to shut a guy down for the rest of the regular season. You don't have a whole lot of time left. You know you're playing Colorado in round one. The only thing that you have to play for right now is who ends up being in a higher seed. And really, if you're that worried about home ice, you probably shouldn't be if you're Chicago, and it doesn't sound as if they're all that worried about it. So I think Chicago's the better team. They will beat Colorado regardless if they finish number three or number two in that Central Division. But as we said earlier, home ice is more important to Colorado than it is for Chicago. I think that it's a big thing for the Avalanche to strive for, but I think if you're Chicago, you can shut Patrick Kane down and give him a little bit more extra time. You can give Jonathan Toews three or four more extra games to rest and recuperate than you could perhaps if you're the Colorado Avalanche, because you have more confidence in your group being good to go once the games become that much more important in mid-April. Toews, 28 goals, 68 points in 76 games this season, also plus 26 on the season for the defending Stanley Cup champions. A pretty ugly incident last night in Tampa as the Lightning and Canadiens were playing in a first-round playoff preview.
Koska will find his way to center. Gets to the line. Hit by Murray. Down he goes. He's out.
He's out.
He's out cold.
He's not moving.
No, he's out cold. His arms went straight up.
And I don't know what's going on. We're not on... I can't hear anything from my head. Like, I've got nothing in my.
You're on the air.
I can't hear. I can't hear myself. So I'm not sure if I'm on the air. Oh, what a day it's been today. Anyway, so I think I'm on the air. I can't really hear any of the feed as to what's going on the air. However, that was Doug Murray. Goodness gracious. There we go. That was Doug Murray hitting Mike Koska of the Tampa Bay Lightning last night. And what happened is you had, I can hear now, so stop pressing things. So basically, I apologize for this. I know it doesn't sound good to you if you're driving. I can't do much better than this. The Lightning defenseman took the elbow in the face from Murray. Murray was kind of looking to follow through on a check and instead got him with an elbow and knocked him out cold for a little bit. Got up on his own power. That was good to see and was reportedly diagnosed with a concussion on Wednesday. Now Doug Murray is going to have an in-person hearing with the NHL tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And that in-person hearing is likely going to see him get a 3 or 4 game suspension, which is probably warranted. I mean, is he a dirty player? No. But could he have avoided laying a pretty dirty elbow on Mike Koska? Yes, he could have. And that's probably the way it's going to end up when it comes to Doug Murray. And finally, on the NHL front, Paul Ranger is the Toronto Maple Leafs nominee for the Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy. And this is a first of a few Masterton Awards coming out. We've got one on the Flames front in just a second. But Ranger returned to the NHL this season after a 4-year absence, abruptly leaving Tampa Bay for personal reasons in October of 2009, then played last year for the American League's Toronto Marlies. This year, the 29-year-old signed a 1-year deal with the Leafs, and and made the team out of training camp. He has 4 goals and 12 points in 49 games. So Paul Ranger is your Masterton Trophy nominee. So good for him. And that's kind of as we pick up, as we continue on Headlines.
Sportsnet 960. Headlines continues with the Calgary Flames.
Because the Flames nominee for the Masterton Award is Captain Mark Giordano. The Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy goes to the player who best exemplifies the qualities of perseverance, sportsmanship, and dedication to hockey. Voted on by the Calgary chapter of the Professional Hockey Writers Association, which, by the way, the Calgary chapter, nothing but hacks. Just kidding. It's all good people. But the PWHA Calgary chapter nominated Giordano, and no doubt about it. I mean, you can definitely understand why. Here's their reasoning. Their quote is, in the NHL's top 10 in average ice time at 25 minutes plus per game, Giordano has reached career highs in goals and points and has developed into the quintessential captain for a rebuilding Flames team that has surpassed expectations with its performance and competitiveness. Giordano, who wasn't drafted but signed as a free agent after his overage season in the OHL, reached the NHL after a few years in the minor through sheer determination and willpower. The 30-year-old blue liner has gone from being one of the league's biggest secrets to being among those considered for Canada's Olympic hockey team thanks to a complete two-way game and tough but honest style. Moreover, he's become a perfect leader in taking the captaincy after Jerome Iginla was traded, guiding the young players in the organization with not only his performance. He's among the league leaders among defensemen for points per game while maintaining a positive plus-minus, but his actions off the ice. Giordano's development is an example to all young players for what they can achieve with a never-give-up attitude. Unquote. Kind of tough to disagree with the Calgary chapter of the PWHA there and their reasoning as to why Giordano should be Calgary's nominee for the Masterton. I mean, it goes to different team nominees for different things. I mean, I think we know what Minnesota's is going to be. It's probably going to be Josh Harding. And there are other guys who bounce back from really serious health things and are able to resume their careers. And some guys like Ranger had personal issues that they had to deal with and bounced back. And then in some cases, you've got a case like Mark Giordano, whose career has kind of exemplified the Bill Masterton Memorial Trophy. And this is maybe a nice nod for him in that respect. Plus what he's done this year. So I say very, very deserving. It'll be part of the end of season NHL awards, who eventually wins it. So we hear Paul Ranger for Toronto being their team nominee, and then here in Calgary, Mark Giordano. The Flames also announcing today they've recalled defensemen Chris Breen and Mark Kandari. Breen from the American League Abbotsford Heat and Kandari from the AHL's Chicago Wolves. You're saying, what the heck? Why is Kandari coming up from the Chicago Wolves? If you remember, Kandari was kind of loaned to Chicago. He started the season with Abbotsford in the American League, but wasn't getting a ton of ice time, and maybe the fit wasn't great there. So they made the decision to loan him to Chicago, still as Flames property, and they can recall him the same way they could anywhere else. So they've recalled him from Chicago and Breen from Abbotsford. And as we told you earlier, the reason is, we kind of were talking about this last night before the news became official, but had got a tip last night that it sounds like Tyler Watherspoon's getting shut down for the season, but I wasn't able to pinpoint what the injury was. Well, now we know. Season-ending shoulder surgery later this week for Tyler Watherspoon. The story there is they were hoping to maybe not even have him in the lineup yesterday, but he was good to play through it and had doctor's clearance to play through it, so they couldn't get a body there in time from Abbotsford. Breen nor Kandari could have gotten to Toronto to play that game in time. So Watherspoon, they decided to play one more game and then shut him down following the game. The bad news is on two fronts. First of all, for Watherspoon, it's disappointing just because of how well he's played in his call-up and how much he's progressed in his 12 games at the National Hockey League level. So that's the disappointing part first, is that you're getting a really nice glimpse of what he might be, and now that glimpse comes to an end. The second frustrating part is for Abbotsford, who's playoff-bound, and now they don't get a big part of their blue line back for the playoffs. That's also kind of frustrating. On the Breen front, he's played 38 games with Abbotsford this year. Got a goal and 4 points along with 29 PIMs. Also played 6 games with Calgary earlier this year. His first NHL game was on October 23rd, 2013. As for Kandari, he split his season between Abbotsford and Chicago, combining for 9 goals and 23 points along with 73 penalty minutes in 54 games. 4 games with the Flames last season, netting his first career goal and a pair of assists for 3 points. And one more Flames note. This will surprise absolutely nobody, but Boston College standout and Flames fourth-round pick Johnny Gaudreau is one of the three finalists for the 2014 Hobey Baker Memorial Award for given to the best player in U.S. college hockey. So Johnny Gaudreau, along with Greg Carey of St. Lawrence and St. Cloud State's Nick Dowd, are the three nominees, but this one is a landslide. Gaudreau's the only member still playing. He's off to the Frozen Four in Philly next weekend. Not this coming weekend, but the weekend after. That's also when the trophy's going to be given away. But the national scoring leader and the Boston College junior has 35 goals and 77 points in 39 games this season. Nothing but points for Johnny Gaudreau. Carey, one of the top 10 finalists last year, he plays with St. Lawrence, has 39 assists and 57 points in 38 games. And Dowd is a Kings pick. He's actually a Kings product after signing there. And he had himself a pretty good year with St. Cloud. But there's no doubt on this one. Johnny Gaudreau's very likely going to win the Hobey Baker. And now Flames fans are crossing their fingers that once his Boston College season comes to an end after next weekend, that maybe he signs a contract with the Flames. Let's continue on headlines.
Sportsnet 960. Headlines continues with Major League Baseball.
Lefty Mark Burley begins his 15th big league season tonight when the Toronto Blue Jays return to Tropicana Field for Game 3 of a four-game season opening series with the Tampa Bay Rays. A little bit of a sigh of relief if you're a Jays fan following what happened on opening day on Monday when they were shelled by the Rays. Yesterday, they were able to come away with a 4-2 victory. Burley will go up against Tampa's 24-year-old lefty Matt Moore, who's coming off a 17-win season in his second full tour of the major leagues. But Burley, to me, is the story. 35 years old. And what do we expect from Mark Burley this year? Well, I know what John Gibbons, the Jays manager, expects. It's the same thing he expects from all of his starters.
We hope you don't have too many games in a row where they all need to be used. You know, then that's why the guys that start the game have got to hopefully at least get you through six innings.
And yesterday, Drew Hutchison got the Jays through 5 1/3, but was pretty good through 5 1/3. And he's kind of in a different scenario. First major league start in a year and a half. And so they decided to kind of dial back his workload a little bit. That'll continue and increase as the year goes along. Burley's 35, though, and a vet. Let's see what kind of stuff he's got this year. Jays and Rays at 5:10 first pitch. We'll join this game in progress at 6 o'clock here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Final scores from the majors this afternoon. Detroit gets by Kansas City 2-1 in 10. It was an 11-inning game for the White Sox as they meet Minnesota 7-6, and Atlanta shuts out Milwaukee 1-0. Underway right now, top of the ninth inning, Oakland holding a 6-0 lead on Cleveland. That's what's happening on the diamond.
Sportsnet 960. Headlines continues with the Canadian Football League.
A couple of football notes to close out headlines. First, in the CFL, where the BC Lions announced that running back Andrew Harris has signed a contract extension, keeping him there through the 2015 season. Harris enters his fifth year with the Lions and has over 2,500 rushing yards to go along with 15 touchdowns in his time with BC. Here is General Manager Wally Buono.
I'm very pleased for a lot of reasons, as I've stated before. You know, the fact that Andrew was willing to settle here in British Columbia, in Vancouver, make this home now, and for him to also commit to the BC Lions, you know, for this year and the future, I think speaks, you know, for where we're going and with a player of his caliber.
Last season, Harris just 2 yards short of 1,000 yards on the ground while leading all CFL backs with 513 yards on 61 receptions. His 2013 numbers included top three rankings in touchdowns, rushing yards, and yards from a scrimmage, and it garnered him a team nomination as most outstanding Canadian player for a second consecutive year. Harris wasn't as effective in 2013 as he was in 2012, but was still a pretty good player and a very, very versatile weapon for the BC Lions. And I think as they get back and there's a little bit more, I guess it's just a little bit more terms of a solid ground for this team, you know, with I think next year they'll be a little bit healthier. I think you'll see Harris be much more a part of their offense as he enters the first year of that contract extension next year. Good player, though. Good Canadian player. And, you know, you take a look at him and John Cornish, and you know, two of the top running backs in the CFL, both with Canadian passports. It's been a long time since you could say that was the case. We got one more stop on headlines.
Sportsnet 960. Headlines continues with the National Football League.
And Washington has now finalized its biggest move of the 2014 offseason, signing receiver DeSean Jackson. He returned to Redskins Park to sign his contract after 2 days of visits and negotiations. He was recruited by all kinds of people, included D'Angelo Hall and Pierre Garçon of the Redskins, and even rapper Wale was part of this recruiting party to get DeSean Jackson to sign in Washington. $16 million guaranteed in the three-year $24 million deal, and here is the former Eagle.
No, I was just looking for an opportunity to come in and just be productive and help out any way possible. So, you know, I think this place right here is, you know, a great place and has some great things going on, and I'm just happy to be an addition to help this team win.
If all of this stuff that we're told about that is bad off the field, if all these reported gang connections and if all of these, off-field distractions can be reined in by the team and the player, then Philadelphia is going to be kicking themselves for losing this guy. Because with RG3, I think, being a whole lot healthier, and now with DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon as your number one and number two threats as receiver, this could be a much more potent offense in Washington next year. Very excited to see DeSean Jackson fit with the Redskins. And he stays in division and joins the rival Redskins. Whew, that's going to be quite the storyline when he makes his return to Philadelphia next year. That is Headlines. Our Wednesdays with Walker segment is next on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
The best insiders, the breaking sports news when it happens, tons of play-by-play. Calgary, this is your sports radio, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Pretty excited for today's edition of Best of the Best, because looks like it's going to be a pretty good one. I think William's got some pretty good stuff cut up. We'll do that later on this segment. Welcome back to the program. Pat Steinberg along with you live from our in-studio location. We're here so rarely. And whenever we're in studio, like if you listen to the last segment, whenever we're in studio, something bad happens. Like a mic breaks, or in this case, my headphones broke and I thought we were off the air. And now, of course, we're in studio, and big-time Andrew Walker's blowing us off in Toronto. He's like, yeah, let's do this segment Wednesdays every day. I want to do that. Now I can't get a hold of him. We'll try and get a hold of Andrew Walker. Wednesdays with Walker is what we're calling the program and or the segment. I was so excited because we were talking and kind of excited to try this new, not even a segment, but this thing that we're going to do to end off the segment with Andrew Walker, because we know he's a grump. We know he was a grump here, and now that he's living in the bigger city, he's even more grumpy. So we're kind of looking forward to who is Walker grumpy at this week, and we had a good nomination if you follow the guy on Twitter. But if we can't get a hold of him, then we're not going to be able to do the fun bit. Couple of texts as we continue along on the program today. 960-960. I'm not quite sure what this text is getting at, but we were talking about Gaudreau and how he's going to be a landslide Hobie Baker winner, and a guy says, why didn't you mention he's overaged? It's easy to get excited, but a 20-year-old playing against a 17-year-old is not accurate to say he was dominating. Little different in college hockey. Gaudreau is, what, 20 years old. He's a junior in college, and he's a young junior in college, so it's different. You can't start college until you're college-aged. You can start major junior hockey when you're 16. So an overager in junior hockey is 20. A senior in college hockey is most of the time like 22, 23 years old. So it's a little bit different. So Gaudreau is dominating against juniors and seniors. He's not older than most people. He's very much in his wheelhouse. So That's the feel on Johnny Gaudreau right now. So I wanted to kind of address that. Also, somebody had texted in a little earlier about these college players and, you know, what the Flames might end up, you know, getting with these guys. And Agostino, Hanowski, now Van Bibrandt, and Gaudreau and Arnold seem like they might be coming in the offing, and we don't know when we're going to hear from John Gillies. All of this. I just think that the most important thing, it goes back to that talk we had about Burke at the top of the hour, but that is spread the net. Like, you know what? You've got your college guys. Give them the opportunity. See if they can make the jump from college hockey right away. And if they can't, then you know. Like, if Bryce Van Bibrandt isn't an NHLer, what have you risked? Absolutely nothing. You know, it's money. That's all. And a contract spot for a little bit. It's not like he's negatively hurting your salary cap or whatever. So that's kind of my feel there, and that's kind of why I kind of profess the way they're thinking. I don't mind that they're giving, whether it be junior hockey players or guys in their first year of pro, like Wotherspoon, because you can't really have junior hockey players playing in the NHL, but Wotherspoon's in his first year of pro and is still technically junior aged, having him get a good chunk of time, or going the route of Agostino and Vibrant making the jump to the NHL right away, it all kind of makes sense to me. Anyway, let's do this, because we're not having any luck hooking up with Andrew Walker, and we're getting big-timed by walks. And I knew at some point the Toronto thing was going to get to his head. I knew at some point he was going to big-time us. So why don't we do this? Are you ready for best of the best? Why don't we kick that off right now? A little bit earlier than we usually do, but some good stuff nonetheless, because I kind of got an opportunity to see and hear a little bit of what Will's thinking today. So let's get started.
The best quotes, the top highlights, and anything else that you need to hear. This is the best of the best on The Big Show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, Will Nault is on the other side of the board today. Soon enough, we're going to be moving to a new studio, and it's going to be like a real studio where the producer and host aren't in the same room. Like, I don't know if you're familiar with sports radio, but you know Bob McCown in Toronto? Like, he and Stephen Brunt are in a studio, and the producer has his own room where he can get on phone calls, and it's soundproof. And
I can actually cut audio when you're on the air.
That's a real radio studio. This is a play radio studio.
We're in a closet. Right,
we're playing radio here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. You've got the best of what we need to hear on your Wednesday drive home. Where are we starting, William?
Well, let's start with the Washington Capitals. For those fans that are listening right now, if you guys are aware, the game day segments you might see on the Flames website done by Rob Kerr, usually, and he'll get help with Flames TV host Kristen Hallett. They do the same kind of thing in Capitals land, but it's called Capitals Game Day. Here's what it actually sounds like.
Hello, everybody, from First Niagara Center in Buffalo, New York. Alongside Mike Vogel, I'm John Walton, and this is Two Man Advantage, presented by United Association. The Capitals, their fans, even the players, need to kind of bear in mind that even though Buffalo was struggling early on this year, they played a lot better of late. They've taken points
in
four of their last
five.
So
this is what it usually says.
Yeah, this is the real deal.
So that's the real deal. Okay.
Once you get both guys there, okay, that's the real deal. Yesterday was April Fool's Day, if you remember.
That's right, it was.
So Capitals Game Day was done by Jason Chimera and Joel Ward. Jason Chimera acting as Mike Vogel, the color guy on radio, and Joel Ward acting as the play-by-play guy, John Walton, on Caps Radio Network. Here is the Caps Game Day with Jason Chimera and Joel Ward.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. I'm John Walton. Welcome to the Man Advantage, presented by United Association.
And I'm Mike Vogel, Caps 3-6 Fox, a.k.a. the Silver Fox.
And Chimera's wearing a silver shoulder-length wig.
When the Green Line scores, but when we're 16-42, if the Red Line scores a goal, and we're about 24-52 when the Gray Line scores, what do you think
Joel Ward
about
can't
like,
even handle
the 5-on-5 play and that's a statistics? So what do you think we need to do better to get everyone on a cohesive unit?
Fox D. Good morning,
Fox D.
I like how he went for the cliche get pucks deep. Trev, where you been? Where are get pucks deep shirts? Yeah. But he couldn't even keep it straight. Get pucks deep, but he couldn't even get it out with a straight face. Yeah. The best part about that is maybe they should have been focusing on their game
yesterday because they
went out and got absolutely pulverized by the Dallas Stars, and it wasn't even close. I mean, as soon as Sagan tipped in that Jamie Benn shot, it was the Dallas Stars show in Washington. So as funny as it was, maybe next time Adam Oates is like, hey, idiots, don't be doing this fun April Fool's Day stuff. Can we focus on our game? Because our playoff hopes are very, very drastically slipping away from us and rapidly slipping away from us.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be seeing a Caps game day with Chimera and Ward anytime soon, which is unfortunate because it's hilarious.
Even if they won, I don't think Adam Oates would have laughed because I don't know if Adam Oates has emotions.
Yeah, he's pretty stone-faced, isn't he?
I'm still trying to figure out if Adam Oates is RoboCop. I'm not sure, but that guy doesn't have a whole lot of smile gene on him. We need to lighten old Adam Oates up.
And the signature John Walton, good afternoon, good night, good whatever.
Yeah.
That's Joel Ward did at the end.
Wrap it. Get the wrap.
To wrap it up here.
Good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Nice game against the Stars, boys.
Good focus there, boys. You're the host of Overtime here on Sportsnet 960.
Mm.
So this will be a fun topic to do.
Oh, okay.
Call-in show in Cleveland. I'll let you let the clip play, and we'll talk about it after.
Scott calling from Sandusky. Hello, Scott. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, I was wondering what you think of the chances of Derek Jeter going to the Indians.
Would you repeat that, please?
I was wondering what you thought of the chances of Derek Jeter going to the Indians.
That's the best part.
That's what I thought you said.
What you think?
I think you're an idiot. That's what I think. Oh. Now I've heard it all. Oh, baby. What do I think about the chances of Derek Jeter coming to the Indians? That may be the dumbest, stupidest call and question I've ever encountered. I'm entering my 46th year on the air doing this, you know. I think that was, that one may take the cake.
Not just Derek Jeter, but the Derek Jeter.
Is this a Cleveland radio station?
What time is it? Whoa!
So there you go. It's Fox Sports Radio in Cleveland, and they telecast it on TV, like you'll
really?
See
like,
Tim
like,
and Sid and yeah. whatever. And I guess they have a call-in show, and they have the number.
Hey, guys, I think you just got trolled.
Displayed on the screen. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was fake, but still hilarious.
Well, yeah, but like knowing that I've done the call-in thing before, I can usually tell when guys are trolling, and you're like, okay, let's just move on from that question because this is ridiculous. Because, you know, we've seen that before. I've had guys call in and be like, hey, Pat, you think they'll name Jerome Iginla as the next captain of the Flames? But okay, good one. Let's move on. And you give them less power if you just like, okay, that was a troll. Now let's welcome George to the program. Whereas these guys, I think they bit hook, line, and sinker on a troll, and that guy's probably...
Do you actually think that was a troll, though?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I think that I and that's because I know that, for instance, Calgary Puck used to do their Calgary Puck, what do they call it? I don't remember. But they used to go on there like, hey, let's do one thing, call into Kerr or Steinberg in overtime. And I remember one was Hailstorm, and I don't remember what some of the others were. But they had like some funny things, and each guy would kind of bring it into the conversation some way. Like, and I remember I had it done to me. It was like, they were talking about, yeah, you know, the way the Flames are playing right now, it's kind of a hailstorm. And the next guy would be like, well, I just don't know if the Flames can get out of this hailstorm that they're in right now.
Dude, that's
and I
funny,
caught
though.
On. It, yeah. It was. But I think these guys got trolled. I really do.
Funny regardless. I mean, Derek Jeter going...
You are an idiot!
I've been doing this 46 years. That might take the cake. And he bought it. Anyways, Dirk Nowitzki was on Conan last night. He's doing a show in Texas right now as a chance to kind of grow his show and grow viewers around the country. So he's in Texas doing a show live in Dallas. He had Dirk Nowitzki on yesterday, and Nowitzki gives him a Texas citizenship quiz. Here it is.
Great to be here. Thank you very much. Conan, you talk a good game.
Okay.
And now it's time to answer questions about this great state from a true Texan. Me.
All right. I am ready. Let's do it. Here we go.
All right. Here we go. What is the state nickname of Texas?
The Lone Star State.
Who is the current governor of Texas?
Rick Perry.
The city of Dallas was founded by whom?
J.R. Ewing.
Name the largest dome in Texas.
Dr. Phil.
Wait. What is the leading cause of heart attacks in Texas?
Tony Romo.
What is my NBA nickname?
Your NBA nickname is the Dunking Deutschman.
Correct. I would have also accepted these ones. Dirk Diggler. The German Wunderkind. The Germinator. The 7-foot schnitzel. The Berlin Tall. Super Strudel. Baron von Schlammenstein.
Okay, now that he's laughing for
Admiral von Schlammenhausen.
Yeah, it goes on a couple more, and Conan's like, okay, we get it. We get it. Pretty funny stuff, though. I thought the best part of that was what gives the state of Texas heart attacks, Tony Romo.
Yeah.
Which is why, why would they give that guy $100 million?
I don't know if you've ever been to Texas, but everything they say about it is true. I love it. And the state of Texas, they say everything's bigger in Texas, and it's legit. Like, you go there, and billboards are the size of semi-trucks. You're like, do they need a billboard that big advertising for Steve's Pasta Emporium? Like, you could have just had a regular size bill, but they are, and everybody's truck is jacked up. So you're driving on the interstate, and everybody's you're driving in a regular rental car, and you're like, does that guy need to have 5-foot springs on his wheels?
His tires are taller than your rental car.
Oh, goodness gracious. Everything truly is bigger in Texas. It is a great state. Austin, Texas, Dallas, Texas, San Antonio, Texas, all outstanding. Skip Houston if you can. But the other three, outstanding. I would go back to Texas, hopefully with a better person next time. But I would go back to Texas any day of the week. It is an outstanding state.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. And it's one of the things on my bucket list is to see a game at Cowboy Stadium. So that would be pretty cool. Yesterday, the Flames were in Toronto taking on the Leafs, and a little clip from Randy Carlyle's scrum, which was hilarious. Pat's got experience in this, but I don't think Bob Hartley's ever said this to you.
Franklin, quit tweeting.
So the reporter's about to ask a question, and Randy's like, hang on.
Quit tweeting.
I love that.
Guy must have been right in his face.
I think Hartley's caught me once or twice tweeting in a scrum. And so, because I multitask. So I got my mic in the scrum. And look it. There are no social rules when you're in a scrum. You're battling with 10 other people, and you're seeing whose arm can get closer to another man's face and who can get closer and into eye contact range. I don't think I'm doing anything rude by tweeting while this bizarre social comment is continuing in front of us. So there is nothing wrong with tweeting in a scrum because there are no social rules to begin with. Although I think Hartley's looked at me once or twice and what is this guy doing?
Yeah.
Why is he on his phone? Is he really typing what I'm saying it. Are you a stenographer? But I saw it with some of the gals who cover the Bruins when they were in here. Three of them were doing it at the same time. They were all racing in the scrum to see who could tweet it out first while they also were had their mics in. I was like, geez, that's impressive. I guess I'm not the only one who does that. The best part was when I was doing an interview on my iPhone because recorder had died. And
you're like, how am I going to do this?
So I got the iPhone ready, turn it around, as I'm tweeting, you can hear me hitting my iPhone, and you can hear it on the mic. So all you hear is Bob Hartley's talking, and hear this. Because I'm typing as he's speaking. So, yes, I am guilty of being a scrum tweeter.
That's how you have to do it, though.
Yeah.
If you want to get that out on Twitter.
Yep, it's the only way. Is that it?
That's best of the best.
Good stuff. And bad form from Andrew Walker.
It's big time in us.
That is a big time offense. He's probably got something on the go.
He's probably at the Raptors game.
He's slam dunks and alley-oops.
No, he's watching the Jays game. He forgot.
He probably did forget. He's probably so dialed into the Blue Jays game. And
he's at the bar getting ready for the Jays game.
First pitch is 5:10. Can't do
7 minutes away.
Radio. A couple of texts at 960-960 as I wrap things up here in hour number four. You're saying the Flames could only get a fifth-round pick for Camilleri. It seems strange they would take Stempniak for more. If the Flames could get the same or more than what they received for Stempniak and let Camilleri walk, then that's irresponsible, let alone stupid. And with Camilleri gone, it would increase the draft lottery chances, open up another spot to evaluate another forward, save some cash, and not make fans miss him more when he's gone. Now, if the Flames can sign him, well, kudos. The thing is, it doesn't necessarily work that way. It's not like you're like, hey, well, we just gave Stepney, we just got a third for Stepniak, so you're giving us this for Camilleri. They had a preordained deal with Pittsburgh already in the works that Pittsburgh really wanted Stepniak. He worked in their salary cap structure. He worked in their on-ice structure. And they said, okay, we're willing to give this up for a guy like Stepniak, but we're going to chase a couple of other things and come back to you. That deal got consummated so late before the trade deadline that it didn't even come across until like 2 hours after the deadline passed. So it wasn't as if they were like, okay, well, we're getting a third for Stepniak, but you know, we're going to compare that with Camilleri. Problem is, there's always the fit and the other partner in the trade. And from what I've kind of been able to garner, and you take a look at what guys like Molson, Vanek, and Gabrick got the teams that traded them, I don't know if there was an offer a whole lot better than a fourth or a fifth round pick out there for Mike Camilleri, because he wasn't playing all that well at the time. His salary cap hit is a whole lot more difficult to absorb than Stepniak's. And so with all of that, you kind of, and there was that massive queue behind Kessler with the more premier forwards, I think it all kind of played into it. So no, I don't think it's that simple to just compare Stepniak to Camilleri. I've been told that, you know, that they didn't get what they were looking for, something specific with Camilleri. There was nothing close for it, and what they were being offered was nowhere near commensurate to what he was. And if you're going to take something that's nowhere near commensurate to what you're giving up, and he can still have value for you down the stretch, I lean towards the value down the stretch than just giving away for a song. That's kind of the way I look at it. Adam Oates is one of the Borg. They plug him in after games. He doesn't have any He does not have any emotions. It's quite rattling to see. And finally, of course, Pat does the overtime show. The guy lives in a world with 36-hour days, overworked, underpaid. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the overworked thing. I probably can be a little overworked. There are times when I'm a little tired at the end of the day. Underpaid? You, sir, are accurate. Peter Maher and the NHL Insider next. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
If your better half is telling you that you listen to sports radio way too much, she gone. You're welcome. Talking sports all the time. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.